Accession number 30395, Mr. Barry Summerfield, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Summerfield?
Yeah, I was born on the 4th of July, named after a famous day, you see. And I was born in Lewes, in Sussex. That's L-E-W-E-S, pronounced Luge by the local people.
And year of you?
1929.
Now, could you tell us a bit about your family? Your family lived in Lewes, didn't
they? My family, my mother's family came from Lewes. My father's family came from the Midlands. As far as history that we've been able to trace, my dad came from Hinckley, or that area, in Worcestershire. And my mother's side came from Lewes. They were Lewes people, born and bred many, many generations. And my grandfather was a printer, so obviously they were reasonably affluent, I would think, at being printers at that time of the war, before the First World War. So I would think they probably were a little bit affluent. However, my grandmother, who was a marvellous woman and who basically assisted in bringing me up, had 13 children in a two-up and a two-down house in Lewes. 13, that. Said every time my grandfather came back on leave, she got pregnant. That was it. I lived in Lewes up until the time I was
Your parents, they were working as...
I should have told you that. My parents were professional people. My father was a professional dancer and my mother was a professional dancer, which in those days I think was an acceptable professional trade. They made a good living anyway, because... I can remember before the war that my father was one of the few people that had a car, and he always had a car. So he must have been worth a few bucks.
Did he work around the country? Did they work?
They basically, from what I can recall, worked in Birmingham. Yeah. And I've been up to Birmingham. The places where they actually lived and worked don't exist anymore now. They're just gone with the new developments.
So you were reasonably well. Was that a happy childhood then?
Yes, incredibly happy. Yes, I had a wonderful time. Having something like 8 aunts in the house at the same time, because it was all girls, there was only one boy ever born. And he lost his leg in the Second World War in the desert. He was a marvellous man, my Uncle Les. But as I say,
all living in the same house?
All in the shesh, yes. Two up and two down. I think there was a little bit of an attic up the top.
How'd you manage?
And the toilet was down the bottom of the garden. You had a candle in there and the newspaper on a string. And that's a fact, an actual fact. I can remember all those details.
So you had a good time in Lewes?
Oh, yes. Yeah. My aunts all paid for me to go to private school, so I did quite well out of it, really.
Now, tell us a bit about your education. Which school did you go to? How old before you went?
Oh, I would have gone to children's school up until the time I was about 3 and a half, I would think. And from there, I went on to a proper junior school, somewhere in Lewes, but I'm not exactly sure where. But by the time I was about 5, they moved me up to Birmingham then with my parents. And then my parents got a sort of a posting, as it were, down to Bournemouth. And we stayed in Bournemouth till 1939.
So you were living in Lewes first, then Birmingham, then...
And then Bournemouth, yeah, but Birmingham was very limited. Very limited.
So how did your education go then?
Birmingham bit, I can't honestly remember, but once we got to Bournemouth, then I only went to one school in Bournemouth, and I think it was called Christchurch. That was the only school that I went to, because, as I say, if you think about the period of time, we're talking about born 1929, left approximately 1935, 36 down to Bournemouth. They only had 3 years before 1939 arrived. So I would have thought I'd have only been in Bournemouth for about 3 years before we left.
Now, tell me, so what happened with the decoration? Well, I mean, you were only 10 or so. 10. How did you know anything about it? Did you hear the broadcast? You got any childhood memories of the decoration?
Oh, yes, totally and completely. It's funny. Now, that's a weird thing. I can remember that broadcast that night as clear as a bell. And I can remember we all sat around the table. We had quite a nice house, actually. And we all sat around the table, and my dad said that this was Hitler. And I can remember the ranting and raving. And when I see things on the television today, it brings the memory back of what it was like that night. And then it was not long after that I was allowed to stay up. And I can remember Chamberlain and the Peace and Air Time bit. I can remember that quite clearly. Also, the other thing was that in those days, your media basically was the cinema. And we all went to the Children's Cinema Club on a Saturday morning, you see. But they also used to show the news. Children's news, obviously. And that got quite interesting because you did learn quite a lot from that. Of what grown-ups had already said, you see. And then you suddenly, it came in a child's context. You understood what it meant.
Did you, were you nervous about the war? I mean, did you think it would affect you and your family
anything about it. It was a joke, wasn't it? You know, it was all a good laugh. And I mean, even when we moved to Brighton, which of course we eventually did in 1939, that I can remember the bombing. I can remember the machine gunning.
We'll come to that. Now, what about, before the war, did you get issued with your gas mask? Because some children can remember that they're getting their gas mask.
We had a gas mask in Brighton. I can remember that clearly because we had to take it to school. But that was the only time I can ever remember a gas mask. Oh, there was one other thing. No, you've just reminded me now. Now, where would we have been? We were in Brighton.
You moved to Brighton almost immediately.
Before the war was declared. Before the war was declared, we moved to Brighton. And I can remember arriving in Brighton, and my brother then would have been approximately a year old. And they issued us with one of the big, funny children's gas masks that you slid the child into. Now you've reminded me, I've forgotten all about that.
Do you remember your own gas mask, what it was like?
It was a bit like the service ones, really, in a way. It had a tube and a box down the bottom and a snout coming out. And it used to steam up like mad, I always remember that. And we used to have to practice during playtime to put it on and take it off.
Did you realise how awful it was, what it meant?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody would, if they were honest, would say that at 10 years old they knew what it was all about.
Now, how did you settle down in Brighton? Which school did you go to there?
I went to Middlesex School there. I only went to the one school because by that time I was... Oh, no, I'll tell a lie. I did go to, because we moved from one side of Brighton to the other, and I went to, the first time I went to a school in Elm Grove. But we didn't stay there very long because then we moved into a house the other side of Brighton.
Now, how do you think the war affected your education? We'll come to the bombing and things, but did it actually affect your schooling much?
I would think so, yeah.
In what way?
Well, you didn't... There was no... To my mind, when I think back on it, there was no continuity. You know, it didn't continue. You could have lessons interrupted for all sorts of reasons. So I don't think in that respect I had a good education, no.
Now, when did the rationing start to impact on you as a child? I mean, was it the sweets or did you notice the food?
No, we were, actually I must admit that we were very, very fortunate where rationing was concerned. First and foremost, by this time, my mother and father had separated. They separated in 1939. My father bought a farm in Kent, so we weren't short of a few goodies. And also, my mother and all her sisters were working in a cafe in Brighton. So we certainly, I must admit that we never went short of food. We were lucky. But the only thing that I can remember quite clearly is sweets. Sweets were always in great demand and you didn't get many. But one of the other lovely things that I can recount is it would be, and I'm only guessing here, but I'm thinking approximately 1942-43. I can't remember how, but we got a banana. And my brother was in the prime in those days. He'd be about 2 years old. And he got this banana, and of course he'd never seen a banana before in his life, so he didn't know what to do with it. So he started to eat it with the skin on. And I can always remember the expression on his face when he thought it didn't taste very nice. but other than that, no, I must admit that rationing, we didn't really find a problem.
What about clothes rationing?
Clothes, I mean, I was only a schoolboy. So, yeah, providing I had a pair of shorts, I wasn't into long trousers at first, obviously. But I now had a pair of shorts and a pair of shoes and a hat, that was it.
Now, what about air raid? Because was it black? What do you remember of the blackout? How did that affect you?
Oh, well, there was a total blackout. There was no question about that. And it was very strongly enforced. But from the point of view of air raid shelters,
I'll come to the error. Okay. What about the blackout? How was it done in your house? I mean,
we had big curtains up at the door and big curtains up at the windows. And if you were going to go out through the door, which led out into the street in those days anyway, you had to switch the light off first and then go out and then shut the door. And they were very, very strict about that.
They did actually shout at you if you did. I mean,
the
wardens and things.
Yeah, oh, yes, yeah. Yeah, you were aware of the fact you shouldn't be doing it. Well aware.
Air raid shelter. Did you have one?
Yeah, we had one in the house at first, which was a huge, great steel thing.
Is that a Morrison? It's like a table?
Yeah, but like a table. That was it.
What was that? Can you describe it a bit more? Because they were more uncommon than the Anderson.
I don't know how we got it, but we got it. But the only thing I can remember about it is when I thought about it years later, I thought, I wonder how the floor's still up to it. Because it must have weighed a ton.
Did you ever have to get underneath? You got underneath it, I presume?
Yes, yeah, you actually, it was slightly taller than the table, so the gap would have been about 3 foot between the top and the bottom.
Did it have anything on the sides, a grill or anything?
It had grills, that's all, but it didn't have any side, as it were, cover.
Now, would you get in that when there were...
We slept in there a couple of times with a mattress and everything. I mean, it was big enough for a whole family to sleep in. It was quite large. It was about 8 foot by about 6 foot. It's quite large.
Now, did you get any other shelters, or Anderson, or was there one in the street?
There was none in the garden. I know that because in the first house we had a very small garden. There wouldn't have been space for a shelter in there. And the others had slabs and things out the back. They couldn't have got it there. The only one I can recall other than that was the one in the street. That was a huge, great brick thing.
Now, can you describe that? Well, because there's a few of them survived, but not that many, and people forget about them. What did it look like? What was it like?
Well, it was square, and it was a flat roof.
But how big, roughly?
Difficult when you were 12, but it would have been about, I would think, about 20 foot long. I think it was quite large. And probably about 10, 15 foot wide. It took over one side of the street, anyway, that I do remember. Okay. And it had two entrances, one at the bottom, one at the top.
What was it like inside?
Dark. Because I don't remember there was any lighting in there. But there might have been, but I don't remember.
Was there any bedding? Bed?
No. It was just a brick building, and that was it.
No benches?
I don't remember any benches at all inside there.
When would you go in it? What was it like when you went in it?
Well, I don't remember that we ever actually went in it because we had this thing in the living room.
So the Morrison was enough for you?
Yes.
Now, what about the air raids? I mean, how did... What were your first memories of the air raids? I mean, you might have remembered the Battle of Britain first, but I don't know whether that was much in evidence.
I remember the Battle of Britain quite clearly because at that particular point I was staying on my father's farm, and that was in Kent.
Well, tell us about that then.
Right, that was quite interesting because we used to get attacked quite, although we were a farm, we were miles away from it, we used to get attacked quite regularly because I'm sure that what was happening is the Germans were either going or coming back and getting rid of their bombs before they got to London. I can remember, and remembering the local, we were at a place called not far from Sittingbourne in Kent. And so we were a good few miles from London, but I can remember London burning quite clearly because the whole sky was absolutely red. I can remember that clearly. And we used to get an awful lot of incendiary bombs dropped on us. An awful lot. But fortunately, obviously, it didn't land on the farm building itself or any of the farm buildings, as it were. But they did, they damaged the swimming pool. I can remember that. And they burnt a good few trees.
And so that was your first experience of that kind of thing?
That was, yeah, because but then I went back to Brighton afterwards for that.
Now, what about when Brighton got? But did it get bombed much?
It got bombed a fair bit, and it got machine gunned quite a lot because they used to come in off the sea, and you know Brighton goes up like that, doesn't it? So yes, I can remember being machine gunned.
Tell us about that. What do you remember? As much detail as you remember.
I can remember seeing three planes coming off the sea. Now, we knew they were Germans because we'd had identification things about planes, you see. And they had I can remember the crosses quite clearly on, so they would be quite low. And I can remember the machine guns opening up. Yeah.
And where were they firing in relation to
that,
you?
Well, they weren't firing at me, fortunately. But they were firing fairly close to me, but I never did fire them. Well, they could have been firing at the barracks, because there was a barracks in Brighton. That's the clear thing that I can remember. Of course, by the time we got to 43 or 44, then... and as I say, then I went back to Brighton and a bit with the machine guns and one thing and another. And after that, I think the next clear recollection of the war was going to be the preparation for D-Day, which Brighton was obviously very heavily involved with.
Now, before I go, did you follow the progress of the war before we go on to D-Day?
Yes.
I mean, and how did you do it? Because you mentioned the films, but we're quite interested in how you, as a, what, 10, 12, 13-year-old little lad...
Well, we had, first and foremost, there was a lot of it done in school.
How?
Well, we had huge, great maps, and wherever the teachers could, they put what was happening on each map so that we knew the progress of the war, as it were. Also, I had the same sort of thing at home on my bedroom wall, the same sort of, so that I could follow it. And, of course, remembering that I'd got an uncle out in the desert.
Did he write to you ever, or was he...
He wrote to the family. He didn't write to me personally, but he wrote to the family, and the family used to tell me exactly what Uncle Les was doing.
What about when he was... You said he lost his leg?
Yeah, he lost his leg.
How did that impact
Well, that... We're never... I'd never actually found out for total sure. The story was that he was in the RASC, and he was apparently doing some maintenance on a vehicle when it collapsed in the sand and fell on his leg. Whether it was that or whether it was blown up by a mine, you never know, and he just didn't tell you. But he lost his leg, came back, lost his leg. I can remember all that quite clearly.
What about the Pathé, the newsreels? It might not have been Pathé, because I think it was more than one then. But when you went to the cinema, that you'd follow the
Oh, news. Yes, yeah.
That would be your only chance to see the pictures.
Yeah, and the other thing was, I can always remember this, that every time the Pathé news came on, it was basically Pathé, or British Movie Tone was another one, that everybody would cheer and shout and things. It's all very noisy. Oh, yeah, everybody got very enthusiastic about it.
I presume you would... What about the radio? Was that a source? Did you listen to
the radio? Oh, total, yes, total. That was on all the time, the radio.
And did you read newspapers? Or too young?
I didn't. I wouldn't have been really over much interested at the first part of the war. I think by the time I'd got to about 1942, 43, I was probably getting interested and reading quite a bit about it.
Now, what did you do for entertainment before we get into this, Dida? But, I mean, you know, as a young lad, what was there for you during the wartime years? Or was it just messing
about?
Well,
it was basically the same as you did before the war. You know, in those days, you made your own entertainment.
So what sort of things would you do?
Well, play marbles, hopscotch, cricket, football, rugby, obviously all the things that boys do.
Were you in the Boy Scouts? Or
yeah, I was in the Boy Scouts at first, and then I joined the cadets, the Army cadets, but that was slightly later on, obviously.
When did you join them?
About 1943, I think. About 43.
What do then? So what sort of training or fun? It's sort of in between. Where were your Army cadets based? What did you do with them then?
We had some connection with Preston Barracks, which was the barracks in Brighton. I can remember that we had we used to meet up there. We did marching and drilling on the square. I can remember that. And we had a uniform.
What was your uniform?
Long trousers. Remember that? Long trousers and a forage cap.
It was the only Parky?
Yes. Yeah. That was the only time I ever wore a forage cap in the Army. That was.
And what would you do? So you go up to Preston Barracks. Was it a particular night, once a week, or was it more often?
I think it would have been once a week, really.
And what would you do when you got there? You go up there to the barracks.
Well, you get lectures from sergeants and things like that, and officers were there. They tell you what was happening. They helped, I think, to make you understand the war. I'm sure they did.
And did they actually start training you? I presume, was there any drill?
Oh, yeah, we did rifle drill. I remember that, but the rifles were so bloody big, it was a bit ridiculous.
You'd only be, what, 13?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you take to drill?
Oh, all right. I took to the Army like a duck takes to water.
Even the Army cadets?
Even the Army cadets. Yeah, I liked it.
What did you like about it?
I tried the Royal Navy cadets, but it didn't work out at all. I wasn't definitely from the Jack Tar.
Why not?
I don't know. It just didn't fit in.
So what did you like about the Army?
I think I like the comradeship as much as anything. It wasn't as if I was alone or anything like that, because I had loads and loads of mates from school and things like that, and we were always out playing or on our bikes, mainly on our bikes, of course, because that was the big thing in those days anyway. I think probably the comradeship as much as any.
Any other trips? So they gave you lectures.
Yeah.
What was going on?
Seem to remember also they took us out in vehicles sometimes. We had a bit of literal training, not driving, obviously, because we were too young.
So what would you do? Going out for a tactical exercise?
No, I do remember one thing that we did. Not far from Lewis Prison was an old chalk pit. And whether it was the Home Guard or the soldiers, I can't remember, but I got a vague feeling it was the soldiers were doing target practice with Tommy guns. And we went out there to watch them. We were taken out there to watch them. Remember that?
But you didn't actually do pretend attacks or defending?
Remember doing anything like that. It doesn't mean to say we didn't, but I can't remember.
Now, did you get any promotion? Yeah, they had a sort of little promotion system in the Army Cadets, didn't they?
So no, I don't think so.
And how long did you do it? 43 till when?
About 43, beginning of 44. By that time, by beginning of 44, I think I was working. I think I'd started work, so there was no chance of doing it.
So you stopped then?
More or less, yeah.
Now, we'll come to that, but you're telling me about the preparations for D-Day. Now, Brighton, you're right smack in the area.
Yeah, right. And what we had was we had the 1st Canadian Division were based at Brighton, so they were all Canadians. They masses and masses and masses of stuff there. It's awesome to see it. Well, if you know Brighton, you'll know that some of the roads leading down to the seafront are very wide, and they had two lines of tanks down both sides. Had whole tank division there. It was incredible. I can remember collecting cigarette cards from the soldiers. That I can remember, because when they'd stop cigarette cards for the English at the beginning of war. So cigarette cards didn't exist anymore, but of course the Canadians came over and they had cigarette cards.
Did you have much contact with them?
Yeah, quite a bit, yeah, because they were, you being a child, obviously, being a young lad, were really nosy and curious, and they were all pretty good, they'd all talk to you.
And you could see it all building up in the area.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And do you remember D-Day itself?
I can remember, the big thing that I can remember is early in the morning when the planes started going over. And they went over in their thousands. I've never seen so many aeroplanes before or since. And it just went on and on for hours, these planes going over. And then it was, I think the majority of the Canadians went via New Haven. I think they did. And it was just that one day we're there and the next day they were gone. And it was quite incredible, just like that. Just gone.
Now, what about your work? You started work during the war, 44.
Yeah, I started work. Yeah, as soon as I left school on the Friday and I started work on the Monday. In those days, you didn't mess about, you went to work.
Now, who decided what you were going to do? Your mum or your dad? You're still in touch with
well,
your dad?
Well, no, my dad was still in touch with me, but no, I went out and got my own job.
And what job did you get?
I worked in a warehouse at first. Just a boy warehouse loading. It was a fruit, a dried fruit, rice and all that sort of thing they had in there. I can remember that. But I can also remember that the governor used me as an unpaid lackey because he flew a glider. He had a glider at Shoreham Airfield. And I used to have to go out on a Sunday and help him with his glider. I can remember that. I did go up in it once. He did take me up in it
once. What was that like?
Oh, it was quite an experience.
You want, tell us a bit about it.
It didn't make me want to go into the RAF or anything like that. I think I was a little bit frightened because it was so quiet when you were up there. It was just the noise of the wind and absolutely nothing else. But it was really good. I can remember I enjoyed it anyway.
Did you enjoy working as a warehouse boy, or do you want to?
I wanted to better myself. I wasn't there very long. My mum had a boyfriend, I think he was, and he wanted to apprentice with me into the carpentry trade. But for some reason or the other, I didn't want to do it. I don't know why, but I didn't. So in the end, I went, I always got my own jobs. You did in those days, anyway. And I saw this advert for a cinema photographer. So in those days, they were numbered, like the number one in a box, in a film box, was the big man. Then it went right the way down. And I became a number four. I always remember that. I was a number four, projectionist.
Not
I was.
A photographer.
Projectionist.
Well, tell me a bit about that. What was that like? Because that's a world that's gone as well.
Oh, yes. No, it was really, really interesting in a lot of respect because first and foremost, obviously, although we were a very small cinema, so you got the big film quite a lot later, but you got to see all the films anyway and all the film stars of the day, which was the big medium, you see, in those days. Television didn't exist. I had seen a television set. I saw my first television set in 1936.
Now, you were number four. So what did everybody do in the projectors? Number one,
well,
two,
there was,
three?
I never remember number two and number three. I only remember number one and number four. So and he said, one of these days you'll get promoted.
So the number one showed the film. What did you do then?
The basic job we did was you checked the reels when they came off. If there'd been a break or anything like that, you mended them. What you used to do is you used to make a clean snip so that you cut both edges clean, and then you would scrape the edge that had the picture on it, the film on it, right? And then you had some special goo, like acetone, which stuck the two ends together so that the little slots all lined up, and that was it. And then just waited for it to dry.
Anything else you had to do? So you checked the cable, what else did you do?
You always warmed it up. Your job was to warm up the machine because in those days it had those, I can't remember what they're called now, the lights that they had. It wasn't bulbs, it was filaments of some sort that touched. I can't remember what they're called now.
So you warm that up. Anything else?
Keep it clean, obviously. Yes.
And you started there, was it 44? Or would that be 45 you started there?
It'd be 44.
So you weren't long in the warehouse at all?
No, I wasn't long in the warehouse. I wasn't long there, actually, because then I was off on another job.